For 3.5 years, Bill de Blasio has been the city's official gadfly. As public advocate, his job has been to point out where the city's fallen short. And that's been the primary message of his campaign up until 2 weeks ago when he catapulted to the front-runner status in polls. Now, as WNYC's Anna Sale reports, he's trying to show voters he also knows how to run things.
Look, the numbers are staggering.
Bill de Blasio is standing in front of a bank of microphones on the steps of City Hall. This has been de Blasio's natural environment since he was elected public advocate. He's not a natural schmoozer. His 6-foot-5-inch frame requires a lot of awkward bending, and his booming voice can sound like one part academic, one part scold. But he's practiced at emceeing press conferences.
She is one of the great voices of conscience in New York City.
He speaks first, then invites speaker after speaker to underscore his point, answers reporters' questions, and it's a wrap. Once he steps away from this podium of microphones, his focus shifts to strategy as he walks off with a supporter.
The more elaborate Jay-Z and Harry thought, first of all, that ain't gonna happen.
De Blasio looks up and sees I'm still there with my recorder.
Hold on, are we recording here?
Is that all right?
Well, no, actually, I'm just talking to someone, actually.
This is de Blasio, campaign operative, the guy who was a hired consultant for years before deciding to become a candidate himself. His aide says they'll see me at the next stop. Candidate de Blasio is back an hour later, visiting a senior center in Prospect Lefferts Gardens.
No one in this whole city has done more for the empowerment of people from the Caribbean.
The crowd starts murmuring as a teenager in a blue T-shirt, basketball shorts, and sneakers makes his way to the front of the room.
There appears to be a TV star here.
It's Dante, de Blasio's 15-year-old son. He and his prominent afro have appeared in both de Blasio's television ads so far. And he is a hit in this church basement of Black Caribbean American seniors. Una Clark, the Jamaican American former councilwoman, makes sure they know Dante is one of them.
And the truth is, this young man has some roots in Barbados. They were trying to make it Jamaica, but that's all right.
De Blasio's delivery softens with his son beside him. They sneak smiles at each other as they work the room, with father occasionally draping his long arm around son.
He's very huggable, don't you think?
Yes.
Everyone has that reaction.
Dante is huggable and a strategically deployed asset for the campaign.
Is this your son?
It's my son Dante.
Your real son?
The real son.
Is that your real son? That's the question from Vincent Lewis, a retiree who lives in Brownsville, Brooklyn. Before de Blasio showed up, he told me he decided 2 months ago he was voting for Bill Thompson, the only African-American in the race. But when the de Blasio father and son come up to shake hands, he stands up to greet them, and he's impressed.
You know, I didn't know who he was. I didn't know he had a black wife with black kids, you know.
So will he change his vote?
I might think about it, you know. He seems to be all right with what he said he's going to do, you know.
This campaign stop was a hit. And as we head for the car, de Blasio is in good spirits.
Welcome to our cozy, fuel-efficient hybrid.
De Blasio sits shotgun. Right. Dante, an aide, and I are in the back.
Dante, you did a good job.
Thank you.
De Blasio's mixed-race family is a central part of his pitch to voters. It's also absolutely central to his identity, one he made for himself as an adult.
I had to learn how to be a father.
Bill de Blasio was raised William Wilhelm. He changed his name to de Blasio, his mother's maiden name, in his 20s, but he was 7 when his father left.
He was a very troubled person by the time I came along. For me, I knew him, unfortunately, almost always drunk. I knew him as an alcoholic.
Just as de Blasio fashioned a new name for himself, he also built a new family centered around politics with his wife, Shirlane McRae, whom he met while they both worked for Mayor David Dinkins.
It's always been a part of who we are. I think the fact that Shirlane and I met in City Hall, that our earliest discussions were about, you know, both of us searching for a way of creating a family that we had not found to that point, and also our social commitment. And we knew the two were going to be intertwined. For us, there isn't a separation. I mean, the personal is political.
That's not just activist-y language. It also comes up when we talk about his home life and how he relaxes. He likes baseball and the TV shows The Good Wife and The Wire. I ask his favorite character on The Wire.
I love the aide to Carchetti. That's a brilliant and very realistic character.
Not the mayor himself or the crusading police commissioner, de Blasio picks the mayor's aide.
He has one of the best lines in the whole show.
The scene is early in the new mayor's term, he explains, and he's meeting with a police official who says,
Mr. Mayor, if you don't mind me asking...
The mayor looks at the aide, and the aide looks back.
And the aide turns to the police official and says, we mind you asking. It's one of the greatest blow-offs in history. We mind you asking. So, I love that. I love that character so deeply.
Before de Blasio was ever a candidate for city office, he was that guy, as Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign manager, under Andrew Cuomo when he was Clinton's housing secretary, and with David Dinkins, the last Democrat to run the city, a time Republicans and business interests like to call the bad old days before Giuliani and Bloomberg. Standing along the Bowery, I asked de Blasio how he thinks about his former boss.
Do you think Mayor David Dinkins was a good mayor?
He was a good mayor. I think as part of the administration, I think we, did some good things, made some mistakes, and it's definitely a mixed bag.
That was a long time ago, before the Clintons and Andrew Cuomo reconstructed unreconstructed liberalism. So I asked de Blasio, the former strategist, if the most progressive candidate in the race can really govern New York City in 2013.
I call myself a progressive because I think it's the right phrase. I'm someone who is all my life, fiscally conservative and cautious. I understand government has to function well for people. I understand we have to drive a hard bargain in our dealings with labor, all those types of things. But what I think is being missed is that progressives believe in using the power of government to protect the public's interests.
But those hard questions about balancing different public interests don't always make for great fodder on the trail. Like when he's stopped by a group of police officers on his way out of a mayoral forum in Brighton Beach. They want a picture.
Retro. Keyword retro. Retro. He doesn't mean fashion either.
The cop means retro pay, since police, like all the major public service unions, are working with an expired contract. After the laughs, de Blasio pauses, seeming to consider this could actually turn out to be more than playful banter.
One negotiation going on the street.
Then the former campaign hand turns to his young staffers and the matters at hand.
Thank you very much. Good briefing, guys. Good job.
And de Blasio gets into the black SUV to head to the next campaign stop. For WNYC, I'm Anna Sale.
Christides owner and philanthropist John Katsimatidis is running against former MTA chairman Joe Loda and Doe Fund founder George McDonald in next month's Republican primary for mayor. It's been an unconventional path to politics for the Greek immigrant turned billionaire grocer. But he tells WNYC's Jessica Gould that after living a version of the American dream, he believes anything is possible. Here's our next installment of A Day in the Life of the Mayoral Candidates.
My day with the candidate begins bright and early at the Hell's Kitchen headquarters of his supermarket empire, oil company, and real estate business. He slides into the company Mercedes, followed by his driver, photographer, campaign staff, and me. Then we're off to Staten Island.
The first thing I could really use your help on is how to pronounce your last name.
Katsimatidis.
Katsimatidis.
Otherwise known as the Catman.
I'm game, so I ask, as mayor, what would the Catman do?
Number one, keep our city safe. Do not give the streets back to the hoodlums.
For example, he says he supports stop and frisk, and he'd like to keep Ray Kelly as police commissioner.
Number two, I said that on January 3rd, I will freeze all taxes that the mayor is responsible for.
He says he's all about jobs and promoting small business. In fact, he says that's what we're about to do. We pull up next to two dump trucks with giant signs that say Joe Loda's tolls kill Staten Island. Steve Margarella owns a nearby concrete company. He says he's angry about the price hike on the Verrazano Bridge while Joe Loda was MTA chairman. So he's voting against him in the Republican primary.
And that's why we're here to support John Katsimatidis, our next mayor.
The businessmen embrace and smile for the cameras. Next, a tour of sandy-damaged stores in Stapleton. Katsimatidis walks into Pat Barbado's electronics shop and steadies himself on the floor, which is still warped by floodwaters.
I mean, basically, we're still trying to get back on.
How much water came in here?
The basement was completely covered.
Wow.
We had to rebuild and...
Did you get any help from the government?
No, none whatsoever.
Zero.
Zero.
Did your insurance company pay you anything?
No.
Zero.
Zero.
That's wrong. That's wrong. As a longtime store owner, I feel your pain.
It's a line he uses a lot, borrowed from his friend Bill Clinton. Katsimatidis, a former Democrat, calls himself a Republican liberal. His daughter married Richard Nixon's grandson, whom she met through Democratic Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney. And it's hard to figure out where some of his ideas fall on the political spectrum. Take his plan to host a World's Fair in every borough.
I went to the 64 World's Fair. For a poor kid from a poor side of town, I had a wow moment.
He's also floated the idea of a monorail that runs alongside the Long Island Expressway.
I've been a CEO, I've been a leader for 44 years. I'm a visionary, I keep an open mind, I create.
Then, as his driver begins to tell me his views on city politics, the Catman's eyes close, his head droops to the side, and he takes a little cat nap. Then the candidate and his wife Margot are off to an event at Sylvia's in Harlem. Catsimatidis calls these things friendraisers, not fundraisers, because he's paying for his own campaign. He's already spent $6 million or so, and he says he's prepared to spend as much as it takes. It's all part of his rags-to-riches story, which he tells again at Sylvia's.
I feel like I'm back home again. I just grew up about 10 blocks away from here.
Back then, his father was a busboy for a restaurant chain.
They used to advertise their daily news 99-cent sale on Sunday afternoon.
Now, he lives in the East Side apartment that belonged to the chain's owner. Only in America, he says.
America.
It isn't all just happy endings, though. The writer Frank Rich recently tweeted that if you want to know what the city would be like under Catsimatidis, just walk into any Gristidis supermarket. The stores have been sued for their labor practices and denounced for high prices. Still, at number 132 on the Forbes list of richest Americans, Catsimatidis says he must be doing something right.
Say hello to John Catsimatidis.
It's after 9 by the time we head to the Santa Rosalia Festival in Bensonhurst. A group of supporters wave and cheer as Catsimatidis and his wife march past the sausage stands and funnel cakes.
Cats for mayor. If you represented John Katz, put those signs up in the air.
Eric Corbell and Mike Greco watch as the politicians pass by.
John Katz for mayor is walking by.
What do you think of John Catsimatidis?
I don't know too much about him, to be honest with you. I might vote for him because I don't know much about him, which might be a good thing, you know?
Name recognition is only part of Catsimatidis' challenge. Some people who do know who he is say he doesn't have enough political clout to be mayor. He's just comic relief in an already zany race. But Catsimatidis says he has a message for his critics.
I made $3 billion. What did they do?
With that, Catsimatidis drops a 20 into the collection box at the Shrine of Santa Rosalia, who is known for her miracles. A recent poll had him 6 points behind Loda, and he could use a little luck. For WNYC, I'm Jessica Gould.
As a former governor, Eliot Spitzer already has some of the intangibles that political candidates need to win. Name recognition, for one, and a larger-than-life persona. But he's struggling to downsize those qualities for a smaller stage, running for the citywide job that few voters understand or know how to spell, that of city controller. WNYC's Janet Babin reports.
When Spitzer ran for governor of New York in 2006, he invited journalists with him on an all-day bus tour. WNYC's Andrea Bernstein went along and captured the candidate relaxed and joking with reporters.
But I think after each stop, we vote one member of the press corps off the bus. What do you guys think? So thanks for coming. This is going to be great.
That campaign move is a far cry from this year's controller election. Initially, Spitzer's communications team declined WNYC's request to spend the day with the candidate. At the last minute, the campaign relented, but I wasn't allowed to ride along in the same car. I pulled up outside the first stop, a utilitarian two-story church in East Flatbush with no parking for blocks.
Hey, I'm following Eliot Spitzer today, so I need to be able to get out. That's what I'm saying.
After parking was squared away, I waited outside the church for the campaign. Spitzer arrived a few minutes late, wearing an impeccable Sunday best stayed suit and white shirt. He broke the ice with a question about WNYC's coverage of the citywide candidates.
How are you doing? So you've done this with everybody, huh?
We've been trying, yes.
You drew the short straw?
Self-effacing. Nice touch for someone with a reputation for an outsized ego.
Thanks for letting me come along.
Our pleasure. It's always fun. If you're not having fun, what's the point, right?
Inside the Tabernacle of Praise Cathedral, Spitzer shook hands with worshipers and swayed in time to the beat. For some voters, Spitzer in church is kind of like a Brooklyn vegan at Peter Luger's steakhouse. Spitzer was elected New York's Attorney General in the late 90s, where he became a fearless watchdog of the public's rights and resources. He sailed into the governor's mansion a few years later with 69% of the vote. But about a year into his tenure, he resigned in disgrace after sordid details surfaced about his visits to high-profile prostitutes. From the pulpit, Spitzer played up his infamous fall from grace to good effect.
As I said, I've seen the peaks of having big titles and big offices, and the valleys of having been out wandering, having paid a price for some things I did that were wrong. You learn a lot more when you're down and out. That's when you really look into the mirror and figure out what it's about.
But in the last days of a comeback campaign, there's little time for prayer. Minutes later, Spitzer and staff, with me frantically blowing stoplights to keep up, head to the Church of St. Mark in the Crown Heights section of Brooklyn. Spitzer worked the crowd outside the service.
Good morning. Good to see you.
As he was walking down the church steps, his opponent was walking up.
Hi, ma'am. Scott Stringer. I just want to say hello.
Unlike at the fractious televised debates, the two met in the middle of the stairs. Spitzer, who's Jewish, patted Stringer, who's also Jewish, on the back and asked jokingly,
"You converted?
Have you converted?" To which Stringer replied,
Depends.
The candidates move on, and an hour later, I meet Spitzer in his SUV outside the First Bethel AME Church on 132nd Street in Harlem. After five campaigns, I ask him how this one's different.
This one is the challenges of coming back are real. The challenges of dealing with an onslaught of media that has sort of been not always easy to read.
The Times, The Post, and The Daily News all endorsed Spitzer's opponent. CNN's Jake Tapper took Spitzer to task for violating the very human trafficking law he signed as governor, which Spitzer said he would sign again, even though he admitted breaking that law. Spitzer connects the vitriolic reaction to his return to politics to the enemies he made as Attorney General when he was known as the Sheriff of Wall Street.
Emotionally, yes, there are people out there who don't like me. They're powerful.
Those masters of the street could get reined in by Spitzer again. The comptroller has oversight of public pension funds and the fees paid to the managers who invest those funds in the capital markets. But first, he'll have to convince a weary electorate that he's worthy. So it's on to the next stop. The Dominican Day Parade in Williamsburg. While he waits in the harsh sunlight for the march to start, people approach and snap photos. The jacket's off, and his crisp white shirt is now streaked with sweat. Spitzer's smile fades a bit in the midday heat.
Losing weight, that's the only thing. Standing in the sun, I'm tired out here today.
Then, something shiny lifts his spirits.
All right, that's the campaign car for next time. See the Lamborghini up there?
He finds the car's owner and peppers him with questions.
How quickly can you go in this thing?
In your state? No.
Turns out, Spitzer went to car racing school. But it's not helping him to move the parade forward. The front row is stuck, waiting for the grand marshal to find scissors and cut the ribbon.
No picture.
Come on, let's go. Move it up.
Move it. Come on, let's go.
Minutes after the parade gets underway, Spitzer ducks right off the route. He's late for his next campaign stop in Brighton Beach. And the crowd in Williamsburg doesn't seem to notice that he's left. For WNYC, I'm Janet Babin.
After narrowly losing to Mayor Bloomberg in 2009, Bill Thompson thought he had a pretty good shot for mayor this time around. But as WNYC's Bridget Bergen reports, he has hit some unexpected speed bumps. Here's the next installment in our Day in the Life series.
It's close to 7:30 a.m. on a windy, cloud-covered morning, and Bill Thompson is greeting voters on the Prospect Heights side of Flatbush Avenue.
Good morning, Bill Thompson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As he's warming up, shaking hands, exchanging pleasantries, voter Clarice Matthews charges over with three dogs, Grumpy Norris, Friendly Buddy, and Mean Little Richie, who can't be more than 10 pounds. Thompson leans in to pet one.
Oh, they're not friendly. Well, the,
okay.
black one is.
I'll move back.
The black one is. But I want you to tell me why I should vote for you. I don't want to hear what you've been saying in the debates, and I don't want to hear about your mother and your father or any. Tell me why I should vote for you, sincerely.
Sincerely?
Yeah.
I'm the best qualified person to be the next mayor.
Why do you think that?
Thompson's father was in the city council and the state senate and became an appellate court judge. Thompson himself was head of the Board of Education before being elected city controller. But at this point in the race, voters want more than his biography.
Number one. But what are you going to do when you get in office?
You're wide awake this morning, let me tell you.
I certainly am. I was happy to see you on this corner.
This is the challenge facing Thompson. On paper, he has all the right credentials, but voters still have questions about what he'll do as mayor.
Good morning. I'm good. I'm a teacher.
Joshua Paris has been a member of the United Federation of Teachers for 18 years.
I'm wondering about retroactive pay. What's the story?
I'm sure that you are.
Teachers have been without a contract since 2009, and many hope the next one includes those pay raises they've gone without.
And being the former education czar here, we thought we'd get a little preferential treatment for the UFT.
Look, the one thing, and I'm very grateful for UFT's support.
When Thompson secured the teachers union endorsement in the spring, it came with a pledge for resources to help get out the vote. This morning, several of the volunteers wear blue UFT t-shirts. But Thompson pledges no more than getting contracts done, using the careful, measured prose of a practice politician. In his tan suburban SUV, Thompson divides his time between his BlackBerry and his iPhone. I ask what apps he has on it.
Some that are just, I mean, obviously news and some other things. Politico, weather, a couple of music things, a couple of ridiculous games.
What ridiculous games?
A couple of ridiculous games, I'll leave it at that.
Come on, are you like a Candy Crush person or?
Candy Crush. That's something, along with a couple of other dumb games.
He holds the phone up to show the game's icon. But in the race for mayor, the matching game is harder to play. Thompson's the only African-American candidate in the race, but he finds himself competing for black voters, specifically with Bill de Blasio, a very tall white man who's been buoyed by his photogenic mixed-race family.
No, I just think, look, there is no taking for granted that any vote belongs to anyone. So I think as you continue to see, you continue to work and reach out to black voters across the city of New York and continue to do that. And others, are doing the same thing. So there is no taking for granted. There's no just because I'm black that people are going to vote for me.
But the tone changes at a breakfast meeting in the steamy basement of the First Calvary Baptist Church. An urgency seeps through.
You go back and look at the polls in 2009, with 2 days to go, they said it was going to be a blowout. They said I was going to lose by over 20 points.
He reminds them he only lost to Bloomberg by 4.5 points.
Let's be honest, people stayed home. Right now, the polls never measure things accurately. They don't. If you've been polled, raise your hand. I'll be impressed. But the truth is, this election is all about who comes out and votes.
The final public event for the day is an endorsement by a group of Hasidic Jewish leaders in Williamsburg.
Good afternoon.
Loudspeakers are set up so people around the neighborhood can hear what's happening on this sunny, bright street corner.
And it's bright also because we have the wonderful opportunity to present to you and endorse the next mayor of the city of New York, the Honorable Bill Thompson.
Rabbi David Niederman, a leader within the Satmar Hasidic sect, says he and the others in the community selected Thompson after meeting with all the candidates. That endorsement is a big deal since the community is known for voting as a bloc. That could mean thousands of votes for Thompson. The event gets interrupted by a protester who is also Hasidic. A group of men at the press conference surround him, knocking off his black hat, and drag him down the sidewalk, forcing him into a storefront on Lee Avenue. Reporters follow the action while Thompson's aide tries to bring us back to the main event.
Guys, can we all go back to the press conference? Bill's actually speaking.
Back in the car, I asked Thompson about what happened.
There was a little distraction for a moment there.
Sure.
Then his driver, Ray, chimes in.
That wasn't a distraction. They dragged my man. He said, nah, come on, you gotta go.
Thompson's not too happy that Ray described the event as a dragging.
Ray, I didn't... being interviewed.
Thank you, Ray.
I forget she's in the back.
Thank you, Ray.
Thompson says he only saw the sign.
Obviously, people have different religious belief.
Then I describe what happened to the protester.
All I could see was the sign and somebody shouting, and after that, that was it, because at the same point, there were people who were speaking.
I asked if a scene like this would make him worry about intimidation in the community.
There is no intimidation.
He and the team are back on message, keeping his comments in check, even when they drop me off on the Manhattan side of the Williamsburg Bridge.
Careful getting out over there.
You're good now. You're okay now.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
For WNYC, I'm Bridget Bergen. A new poll by Siena College and the New York Times shows Council Speaker Christine Quinn's support continuing to fall among likely Democratic primary voters. She got just 17% behind Bill de Blasio at 32% and Bill Thompson at 18%. WNYC's Anna Sale spent the day on the trail with Quinn as she's adjusting her strategy from one-time frontrunner to campaigning from behind. Here's the next installment in our Day in the Life campaign series.
The day starts on a tree-lined walkway to the Spuyten Duyvil Metro North Station, which overlooks the Harlem and Hudson Rivers in the Bronx.
Christine Quinn is here, Democratic candidate for mayor. Say good morning to Chris Quinn.
The commuters come in waves, timed to the Metro North schedule. Within about 10 minutes, a woman passes by who is not a fan.
Carriages.
You should take care of them. Democratic candidate for mayor.
She digs at Quinn's position on carriage horses as she rushes past. But within minutes, she's back on the narrow platform, passing out defeat Quinn flyers. Quinn is the only candidate who's been dogged by these kinds of protests on the campaign trail. Her staff tries to keep her schedule private to foil their efforts to show up.
Question: did you come knowing that the speaker was going to be here?
No, I live here.
Do you just keep those in your back?
I do. Would you like one?
Sure, take one.
Her name is Jill Weitz, and she lives in Spuyten Duyvil.
I was outraged when Christine Quinn overturned term limits.
There's less than 10 feet separating them, but Quinn ignores the solo protester and stays focused on the other passing voters. But she doesn't just talk to the ones who agree with her, like in this exchange about changing stop and frisk.
I want to feel safe. I don't feel safe when you made it so that people can sue for just because they were stopped and frisked.
No. If they were racially profiled, it's different.
No, it's not. That's not how it's going to play out in the courts.
Well, we're going to have to agree to disagree.
The city's going to. It's going to cost a lot of money.
Just take. Oh, no, you can't sue for money on this. That was taken out of the bill. You cannot. There's no monetary damage. Changes in policy.
Quinn clearly explains the policy, but it's a mouthful. This, in a nutshell, is Quinn's awkward position at this stage of the campaign. Here, she's defending a bill that she didn't personally support, but because it passed council, she's also embracing it as part of her record of achievement.
Richie and Ray, this is Anna.
Hi.
We load into a black Suburban with two police officers in the front and head to a senior center. I ask her about this election, whether after Bloomberg she thinks New Yorkers are looking for a change or want to continue on the same path.
You know, it's interesting because I think it's both. I think there are things about which people are satisfied, and there are things about which people are dissatisfied and want things to change or get better.
This is a tougher sell than frontrunner Bill de Blasio's message, which is basically, unhappy with the status quo? Vote for me. Quinn is counting that voters are more concerned with competence.
And I think that matters to New Yorkers, even if it's on an issue where you're not thrilled with what I may have delivered. You want a mayor who can get things done. Do you need a lozenger?
No. Do you have a sore throat?
I get bad allergies, and I think that all the talking on the campaign plus the allergies is giving me a tiny bit of laryngitis, which is why I sound a little huskier than usual.
But her voice is full-throated as she criticizes Bill de Blasio with one of her many shots at him during the day. She says you want an elected official who has learned to evolve.
But that's different than deciding to say one thing out of one side of your mouth and another thing out of another side of your mouth based on who you're trying to get votes from. And then when you get called on it, not being forthright about it.
She points back to 2005. She and de Blasio were both vying to become the next Speaker of City Council. He told council members he'd be open to extending term limits then, and now criticizes Quinn for endorsing Bloomberg's third term, a move that remains very unpopular with voters. Our next stop is the Hebrew Home, a sprawling senior housing complex in Riverdale.
Thank you very much.
She's met by a very friendly audience of more than 100 seniors and staff members who crowd in to hear her stump speech. The director is also effusive as he introduces her.
Personally responsible for securing over $24 million.
This happens at each stop while I'm with Quinn. People tell her she's younger, thinner, or better looking than what they see in the papers. And someone thanks her for directing council funding their way. Quinn goes from this senior center to another one, where she's joined by her father-in-law, Anthony Cotullo, the father of her wife, Kim Cotullo, and Larry Quinn, her 87-year-old father. Both men are widowers. Quinn and her wife lost their mothers as teenagers. As Quinn prepares to speak to reporters, she urges her dad to sit in a chair.
That's okay.
Well, he brought it out. The child put effort into it. So if you don't sit, it'll be wasted work.
Thank you.
This is part of their shtick on the campaign trail, the playful squawking back and forth. But each time her father sits or stands, Quinn is either right there holding his arm or watching like a hawk to make sure the assigned staffer is doing it right.
What was it like when you came out to him?
Not great. I mean, not great. He actually said, don't ever say that again. And we had a couple of months that were rocky, and then that passed.
Quinn married her wife last year, but they've been a couple since 2001. They moved in together within 6 months of their first date.
Classic, stereotypical lesbian relationship in that regard, I have to say.
When asked, Quinn will talk about the history-making potential of being the city's first LGBT and woman mayor, but she bats away questions about how her gender is affecting this race. It comes up with voters, though, like Aurora Ruiz in the Bronx.
She's a woman, and I know that women are more sensitive to people's feet, what they their needs, and men aren't. Not quite.
But polls show Quinn isn't doing better with women than other candidates. In some surveys, Quinn has more support from men than women. A new poll comes out that shows Quinn trailing Bill de Blasio by double digits. And the candidate who spent months at the top of polls is now in the position of dismissing them.
It was not a particular surprise to me. I think they're going to go up and down. And I'm very confident that we have the wind at our back heading into these final home stretch.
At her last public stop of the day, Quinn loads up a car of donated Rosh Hashanah food at a Jewish nonprofit in Queens. Here, she's among friends.
Good work. A lot of good council funding has gone into this. And so I think that's something that needs to be recognized. And on behalf of the volunteers.
She loads a few boxes into a volunteer sedan in front of cameras.
All right, great. Well, happy and healthy and sweet New Year to everybody.
And then she takes off for an evening of private events, which include a fundraiser for a runoff campaign. She wants to have the money ready, even if it's no longer a sure thing that she'll make it through this primary round. For WNYC, I'm Anna Sale.